Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on IC Saturday here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Calgary, where we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, George Johnson. George, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem, guys. For you, just about.
Well, yeah, we appreciate the time, George, as always, and we're not going to ask you what you won't do for us, but you know, we appreciate the time nonetheless.
George would never deck an official.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly.
Obviously, George brought you on to talk about the Weidman incident and to talk about the Flames in general. We just spent the last 15 minutes debating it here in studio to no consensus among the three of us. What's your take on this incident? This is one of the more bizarre ones we've seen probably in the last decade in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, it is, Salamaki just drilled them along the boards. Now, depending on your take, as I'm sure you guys have chewed over ad nauseum, he was either kind of stumbling his way back to the bench, saw an official, was ticked off that he didn't get a call, and did something really, really, really stupid, or he was, disoriented, like he says. Now, whether or not he was, Mike Tyson in Tokyo against Buster Douglas, I have, my doubts about that. And there's a lot of mitigating circumstances. For me, watching it, he kind of turns into him. He gets his stick up. He's going to bump into him. Mm-hmm. But he gets his stick up. There's a follow-through. Now, and in that regard, the only guy that knows how out of it he was Dennis Weidman. From that standpoint, the league is going to have to look at it, but you got to figure it's 10 minimum. I don't care what the circumstances, you can't do that. You can't go after an official. They should be sacrosanct. I don't care what you think of the job they're doing. I don't care the details of the incident. You got to protect these guys, because if you don't, then we're back to the Broad Street Bullies and it's anarchy time.
And George, I imagine when you were watching that live, you were pretty surprised about what you were seeing. But were you more surprised because it's Dennis Weidman and he doesn't really have a history of these types of incidents or anything really on the suspension type of as far as suspensions go?
Well, and that'll be his defense when they talk after the All-Star break. Obviously, if it's Rafi Torres, they're sending him out to Botany Bay to break rocks or whatever. It's not like Dennis Weidman has a list of priors as long as Dillinger. He's been a pretty, calm, even keel type of guy. He's not a big penalty minute guy. He's not a reactionary guy. And that's, when you look at the incident, it looks terrible. But his history is the only thing that, kind of gives you pause as to whether or not he was like completely out of it and was just kind of had this body right in front of him and reacted or not. Because, like I say, if he'd been somebody else, it's, guilt by past, but he's got no past.
Yeah, and George, we were talking about, as Drew mentioned in the previous segment, I think he should get 20 games. And one of the things that stood out to me was the Nashville Predators bench reaction to the hit.
Yeah. It was kind of like, are you kidding me? I mean, there was a lot of surprised dudes on that bench. There's no getting around that. And it was kind of, it was weird because it just kind of happened. And then the linesman, Don Henderson's lying in a heap, like Gordie Howe elbowed him in the head or something, right? And he's lying there, and it's just only when you saw the replay did you kind of get the full impact of it. You could kind of gauge, just how much damage had been done, because he really got the stick in the and up and just kind of creased him. So, yeah, it was kind of a shocking incident. And you say, and then you look at the player, and it's even more shocking.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is George Johnson discussing the Calgary Flames and the Dennis Wideman incident. George, one more question on the Wideman incident here. You know, he talked about after the game, you know, being dazed or, you know, and not really knowing what he was doing, I suppose. What do you make of the fact that he played the rest of the game after that? There was no sign that he went in for any sort of concussion testing. And, you know, do you think that just sort of puts another nail into the coffin regarding the concussion spotter and their usefulness in this NHL?
Yeah, they're not, that's certainly not going to help their case. Let's be honest about it. You know, he's back out there playing again. And you know, the thing is, too, it wasn't just that he got immediately up and, you know, had this body in front of him, had Don Henderson in front of him. He skated for a little bit. It was deep in the zone where, Salamaki stapled him to the boards. So there's a certain distance there. I mean, and that will mitigate against him, I think, too, because, you know, he's skating, and all of a sudden he turns and there's contact. I mean, it wasn't like he just got up and bumped into him or kind of fell into him or fell down or anything like that. So, you know, again, Dennis Wideman's the only guy that really knows how out of it he was, but yeah, you know, you'd need Raymond Burr's Perry Mason, I think, to get him off of this one. This is going to be 10 minimum and probably closer to 20, I would think. I'm just guessing because the league doesn't want and can't have any kind of, you know, official kind of interference. Hey, I'm a soccer fan, and every time somebody on a field and a soccer official makes a call, there's 22 guys around him, you know, pushing him and going nuts and stuff, and it just can't happen. And this was, you know, obviously far more violent than that.
George, getting off of the Dennis Wideman incident and getting back to, you know, the Calgary Flames, wanted to actually go on a bit of a tangent here.
Go right ahead.
And ask you about, I've talked a lot about him the last 3 or 4 weeks. Wanted to ask you about a former Flame, Jerome McGinley, a guy that you covered for many years for the Calgary Herald. How big of a smile did you have on your face when Jerome McGinley got his 600th career goal?
Well, you know, I think everybody here, this is one of these things where, you know, most of the, you know, he got his 500th. I mean, this guy, we had this argument the other day. Somebody said, well, Lanny McDonald's the greatest one. I said, well, no, he's not. Look at the numbers. I mean, yeah, he left, but, you know, I think if the team had had their way, he would have left earlier. They were looking to rebuild earlier than they made the deal with Pittsburgh at the time. But he wanted to stay here. I mean, this was his home. This was where he was Jerome McGinley and all that entailed. I think the whole city was happy for him. I don't think there's any question. I mean, this guy carried that franchise on his back. I mean, he led it in scoring for 11 years in a row. Think about that. One guy who's not Gretzky or Lemieux leading a team in scoring for over a decade. Now, granted, some of those teams weren't exactly the 76 Canadians. I get that. But to do it, you know, and to be the only guy that was up for, to be the only guy in franchise history to win an Art Ross trophy, the only guy to win a Rocket Richard trophy, the only guy to be a Hart Trophy finalist. I mean, it goes on and on and on. He's the greatest Flame ever. I don't care what anybody says. And, you know, and a nice fella. So I think it was, you could hear the clapping almost to Red Deer, I think, when he put the 600th in.
George, you look at the squad this year. Obviously, it's been a disappointing season for the Flames. There's talk, you know, that Brad Treliving has to make a decision. Are they buyers or sellers? And he doesn't necessarily like that kind of that description, but he's aware of it, of course. Do you think that Yuri Hudler and Chris Russell are on their way out?
Well, I do think they're at a point now where, you know, that they're going to have to look at some of those veteran guys. And Hudler was a guy, you know, a lot of us thought, And it would have been difficult because Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau were maybe the best line in the league for the last two, three months of the season last year. Guy wins the Lady Bing Trophy, doesn't wear his shoes, comes out in the socks, everybody loves him. But, you know, it's trading guys when at their highest value, you know, is something that, you know, GMs that continue to win do. We wondered whether they might spin him earlier than this. You know, he's getting up there in terms of what they're looking for, the demographic that they're looking for. And Chris Russell is a warrior. I mean, this guy's leading the league in block shots again, for crying out loud. But what they're looking at is, you know, they almost fast-track their rebuild, quote-unquote, a little bit too fast, so that this year, at the beginning of the year, I saw someone from the Flames management at the golf course, and he said, holy geez, I said, what's going on? He said, well, he said, I got my neighbors coming up to me saying, oh, you guys will be fourth in the conference this year. And he said, I'm going, hold on a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, we made the playoffs last year by 2 points in the 81st game of the season. And everything outside of the Giordano injury, everything went right. So, you know, people here are maybe having to come down off their, hey, you get off of my cloud thing a little bit and come to reality that a rebuild is just that. It's not a fix that happens every day. It was lovely last year. It was magic. It was something that was, you know, unexpected, and everybody ran with it. But, the harsh reality that teams don't do that in the National Hockey League, not on a consistent basis. And I think Bradshaw Living is a sharp enough GM to understand that and to make the moves going forward with veteran pieces that he has.
George Johnson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Calgary Flames. George, Johnny Gaudreau is currently in Nashville, having put together a tremendous, you know, first half, give or take, of the NHL season, under a point a game. You know, we know how talented he is. We saw how dazzling he was last year in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised that he's been able to replicate that, and, you know, to the extent that he has this season, being, you know, an all-star and just under that point a game mark, as I mentioned?
No, I'm not, because I was surprised last year. I mean, I think all of us were, to the degree of what he showed. I think everybody was a little shocked and pleasantly surprised, obviously, in this town. No, I'm not. The game fits him. He's, you know, he's having covered this league since 1980 or something. I mean, there are eras where Johnny Gaudreau would not have survived. He just would not have survived. But in this era, you know, where it's a skating game, it's small men are back in it and they're playing very, very well. His skill level, you guys know. I mean, it's just off the charts. It's just off the charts, crazy. And, you know, on a lot of bleak winter nights here in southern Alberta, he's going to make them a little bit brighter, take a little bit of the cloud away, because he does some amazing things. So, no, I'm not surprised. You're kind of excited to see how far he can take it. That's all.
Final question for you, George. And, you know, you mentioned timing with the Yuri Hudler thing. Is that also a factor here? You know, Gary Bettman comes through town, starts campaigning for a new arena, and the Alberta economy is not doing especially well right now. Yeah. Where does that all sit?
Well, I think it sits that it's going to be a protracted, you know, debate in this town. It's just. You know, I mean, originally it was kind of like, well, you know, we're hoping to break ground in 3 years and you know, we can hopefully have the rink up in 5. Well, I think you can push that back to 5 and 7 or maybe even more. I think this is something that, you know, the Flames were probably understanding the different political climate here than there was, mm-hmm. and understanding the drop in oil, understanding that a lot of guys downtown that make large bucks are getting laid off, and tickets are, you know, they're harder to, not to peddle, but, you know, a lot of people can't afford them anymore. So I think that they're in this for the long haul, that eventually they'll get a rink done, because these guys usually get what they want. But on what terms, I don't think it'll be on the terms that they set out when we first heard about Calgary Next.
George Johnson covers the Calgary Flames. He's our go-to guy when we want to talk anything Calgary sports. George, appreciate your time this morning, and we'll talk to you again soon, good friend.
Okay, thank you, boys. We'll see you down the road.
Take care, George. Thanks again. It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to George Johnson from the Calgary Herald for joining us in the previous segment. If you missed that, or you missed Tom Lynn earlier in the program, or you missed any of the show at all, it will be available for download on iTunes, on illegalcurve.com, and of course on tsn1290.ca. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Right now, caller number 4 at 780-1290. You're going to win 4 tickets to Tuesday night's show to see Nigel Lawrence at Rumors. 780-1290. Caller number 4 right now wins 4 tickets to see Nigel Lawrence Tuesday night at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
I like how you did that, Drew. 4 tickets. Caller 4.
Yeah. And if we ever give away like 84 tickets, we're going to be here for a really long time waiting for caller number 84.
We're not going to make Chris have to tell 83 people that they didn't win.
Yeah, that would be a little bit difficult if we made him do that. Some trade rumors, some trade roundup from around the NHL. We start with the idea about Andrew Ladd going to the Florida Panthers. That had been talked about and sort of makes a lot of sense when you think about the speculation there. George Richards of the Miami Herald pours some cold water on that idea, saying that from what he's been told, the Florida Panthers have no interest in Andrew Ladd. I have trouble believing that personally. Your thoughts on the fit between Andrew Ladd and the Florida Panthers?
Well, I think a lot of rumors are started based upon past connections, right?
Yeah.
You know, Dale Tallon traded for Andrew Ladd from Carolina for Tuo Marutu, therefore he's going to trade for him again, which is possible.
Mm-hmm.
But George Richards is pretty connected there, Drew, and I'm not saying that Ladd wouldn't fit in well in that team or many other teams. Just wonder, you know, the Panthers have performed really well this year, certainly a surprise team, as he talked about it on Wednesday, but are they going to give up a first-round pick in something for an expiring contract? That doesn't seem like something I would expect them to do, so I tend to agree with George Richards there.
Yeah, and Rich, you mentioned that there's the connection between Dale Tallon and Andrew Ladd, and I think many teams would be able to find a roster spot if Andrew Ladd available
for sure
via trade, but as you mentioned, I mean, he's a guy who's covered the Panthers for many years now. There's no reason to believe why this wouldn't be true. And I think also we're trying to now really find the perfect match for Andrew Ladd. And if you think about it, guys, whenever you hear that a team is going to be a destination for a player and you hear about it for so long, unless it's maybe Ryan Suter and Zach Parise going back to Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
usually it doesn't happen. So, I mean, yeah. We've heard about this quite a bit now, and it doesn't look like anything's happening now. We don't know if Andrew Ladd is even on the trade market, right? But certainly it was a little bit surprising to hear that. But, I mean, they're doing pretty well right now. I don't even know if they need to make a major move.
In Calgary, we just spoke about it with George Johnson, the futures of both Yuri Hudler and Chris Russell.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think those two situations play out, both of whom are going to be unrestricted free agent at season's end?
I think they both get moved. I think Russell gets beat up a bit by some people, but I just think Calgary is similar to Winnipeg. It's too much money on their back end. Brody, Giordano, Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Russell's going to want to get paid. Now, he's an Alberta boy, and you kind of wonder if Edmonton might not be a logical place for him to sign at season's end, but I do see him helping a team. You know, I could see many teams interested. His cap hit isn't that significant, and I could see more than a few contending teams interested in him, so I think he goes. Hudler, I think, probably is less of a market, but also goes. I think that, you know, like Ladd, he can play in, you know, he can, a winger who can score, and he's a different player certainly than Ladd, but there'll be a market for him. You just wonder, to George Johnson's point last segment, if they wait a little bit too long and the ask has to be a little bit lower based on his production this year. Even though Ladd's production is lower this year, Ladd has a better, I'm assuming, reputation in the league. He's bigger. He can play kind of different roles for you more so than Hudler.
Yeah, there's a good chance they both get moved, Rich, and maybe you even see Yuri Hudler go back to the Detroit Red Wings where he started his career, right?
Well, Babcock wasn't the biggest fan of him, but Babcock's not there, so you might be right.
Yeah.
He's a good player, and even though he's having a tough year. Yeah. He was top 10 in the NHL in scoring right now, so he's going to be one of those guys that I think you're going to have a few teams trying to go after him.
Pat Leonard in the New York Daily News says there's a lot of sense for the New York Rangers to go after St. Louis Blues defenseman Kevin Shattenkirk, given he was born in New Rochelle, which is obviously close to New York City. He says that it's going to cost the Rangers either Chris Kreider or Rick Nash.
That's
Can you see
happen.
That being a trade the Rangers would be interested in?
No. Well, Rick Nash is loved by Ken Hitchcock. You have to think, Ken Hitchcock loves Rick Nash. And
Ken Hitchcock being the Blues coach, of course.
Yeah, so I mean, that I can see that connection for sure. Colton Parayko and Pietrangelo on the right side there. give them some possibilities. I'm not sure what they see for a guy like Schmaltz down low, you know, in their mind on the Chicago Wolves there. You know what? Stranger things have happened than that one, Drew. You just have to wonder, like, with Girardi there having slowed down and he's getting paid a big ticket, and what happens with Yandel. I think there's a little more smoke to that than most other big name rumors.
Has he? You didn't seem that bullish about that being a possibility.
No. I think Richie makes some good points. I just look at Kevin Shattenkirk, and I realize that there's salary cap issues, but I can't seem to really grasp why he would be on the trade market just because of how good of a defenseman he is. I mean, you're talking about a guy last year, before he gets injured, he was a Norris candidate. Mm-hmm. And I realize that the Blues have tied up a lot of money in Vladimir Tarasenko, for example. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Petrangelo, Bomeister, those are two really good defensemen. But I think you take Shattenkirk off of that team, a team that sometimes struggles to score goals, Richie, especially when it gets to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You take Shattenkirk. I mean, Shattenkirk's a top 10 offensive defenseman, maybe top 5 offensive defenseman, in my opinion, in the NHL.
Very good top. I agree with you. He's a top 10. He's a power play quarterback. Very smooth out there.
I just don't. I could see him being moved, but.
I mean, it makes sense for the Rangers in the sense that, okay, Yandel's likely on his way out. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Girardi and Staal aren't quarterbacking your number one unit. Are you comfortable with McDonough, or do you want to move to a guy who's a little bit more naturally talented offensively? And I love Ryan McDonough, but Shattenkirk's a better offensive defenseman, in my opinion. And then maybe you move out some forward, and maybe you want to get away from a Rick Nash salary hit.
Yeah, it's possible.
I don't know. I just think there's probably more smoke to that. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's interesting.
Sticking with the Rangers and Keith
Hitchcock. Hitchcock loves Nash.
Is Nash the guy that puts the St. Louis Blues over the top?
I think Alain Vigneault loves him, too.
I don't know, Drew. I got to see the other moves in the roster at the time.
You're still concerned about their goaltending?
I am. I know people we've had on aren't as concerned as I am. I still need to see a little bit more there. I don't trust Brian Elliott in the playoff series, for sure. Jake Allen, I still need to see more.
Another comment from Pat Leonard in the New York Daily News about Keith Yandel potentially being a trade bait to get Patrick Marleau out of San Jose. Yandel's uncle Mike is a professional scout with the San Jose Sharks. And Marleau apparently agreed to waive his no-trade clause earlier in the season to the New York Rangers. Could you see a fit there between Yandel and Marleau and the Sharks and the Rangers?
This one seems like a bit of a stretch to me. I mean, Marleau's older.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he can still skate, still a good player. He can play center and wing. But because his uncle's a scout, that's suddenly going to make that move. And do the Sharks need another defenseman? Like, Brent Burns is dominating on the back end offensively. They have Vlasic. Justin Braun's a good player. Do they need a guy on that expiring deal, or do they need to add forward depth? That seems like a weird mix there.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's out of the realm of possibility, Richie. But
and Paul Martin too.
He struggled a little bit. You're talking about a team right now who is in a playoff spot, and mm-hmm. you could see, you know, add a little offense as you mentioned. Though, I mean, they've got Brent Burns is having a pretty good year, and they don't
pretty good year. He's dominant.
He's dominating, and I don't necessarily know that's a perfect fit, but Yandel's getting moved for sure.
Last one we'll do before we go to the break. Radim Verbata in Vancouver. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. 11 goals on the year so far, 22 points, 11 goals, 11 assists. He's a UFA at season's end. Even though Vancouver's, you know, right on the cusp of a playoff spot right now, can you see him being moved, and what do you think he would fetch in return?
I do see him getting moved, Drew. I think Vancouver has to be realistic. They've moved a lot of young players into the roster this year. I think they're aware of the fact that their real chances are very limited, if not 0%, frankly. You probably are able to get Verbata for a second and a lower prospect, maybe, and Verbata can score, and that's not an easy thing to find on the market. So I think there'd be more than a few teams interested in him. Like, for example, like a Montreal.
Team can't score.
Would he not make sense there? So I see something happening there.
Yeah, when you have a guy who has a 40-goal season on his resume, I think you're going to have a lot of interest. And, yeah, I think, Richie, Montreal is probably a fit there. And, unfortunately, again, the Canucks have just had kind of a up-and-down season. And Verbata, especially with the amount of rookies the Canucks have on the roster this year, I think they've had 8, maybe even 9 rookies on the roster this year. I don't know if he fits into the long-term plans. And next year might be the Sedin's last year. I mean, this is a – I don't think Trevor Linden, Richie, and Jim Benning want to call it this, but it's a bit of a rebuild there in Vancouver.
You have to go through it. You have to. I think the Sedin's hold them back because they're still so productive at their age.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to spend the next hour with our All-Star Break panel. Break behind me right now, Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press, Scott Billick, freelance sports writer who's covered the Winnipeg Jets before. We're going to spend the next hour with these fine gentlemen. It's the Illegal Curve All-Star Break Roundtable. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Third and final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. We welcome into the studio Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press and Scott Billick. He's a freelance sports journalist who's covered the Winnipeg Jets alongside Richard and Ezra as well. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Scott, Jeff, good morning to you, gentlemen. Thanks very much for joining us for this All-Star Break Roundtable here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good day to you, boys.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure, as always, guys. Today, January the 30th, means we are less than one month away from the NHL's trade deadline, and of course the big issue surrounding the Winnipeg Jets pretty much all season going back to July of last year is the Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien situation. Here we are on the 30th of January. Do you guys get the sense, any of you, we're gonna go right around the table here, do you get a sense that there's going to be any softening right now regarding either of the pending unrestricted free agents? Jeff, why don't we start with you here?
Softening in the sense of
that we're getting closer to a resolution one way or the other, or that you might see that Kevin Cheveldayoff is leaning one way or the other in regards to who to sign.
I think we're more looking at a countdown than anything. I mean, there's a month before we really get some clarity on where the conversations are. I mean, one of the biggest things I find with these conversations thing is always, both sides are looking to reach an agreement because both sides are looking to get what they want. So at the end of it, if neither is signed, if one's signed, if someone's dealt, I mean, that's all going to happen before the trade deadline. And we're really going to start seeing where those conversations have gone. Because, if something's reached, then all along there has been production. If something doesn't get reached, well, then obviously there's a stall. And softening up on it, I don't know. I mean, Byfuglien's camp was said to be reported to have conversations while they were in Minnesota, so that's always a good sign. But I think, if anything, leading up to that trade deadline and eventually when it passes, we're going to get some clarity on both.
Scott?
Yeah, it's interesting. If you go by the games played, right? I mean, Andrew Ladd hasn't had the best season, or at least hasn't had the best little while leading up to the All-Star break. Dustin Byfuglien obviously had that great game on Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. Softening, it's tough to say though, right? I mean, like kind of what Jeff said, Kevin Cheveldayoff doesn't give a lot up, right? Anytime he has an interview, he's he says a lot but doesn't say anything at all, and so I think that Dustin Byfuglien is the guy that they want to sign, but I don't know. It's a tough one. Softening is just,
Well, Drew, you're moving closer. We were talking about earlier, moving closer to a resolution on this, and they have to. The pressure is going to be on now, regardless of who says what. I mean, the time will dictate what happens, but you have to think that we talked about earlier that they've gauged the market for these guys, and mm-hmm. if they finally determine there can't be a deal, then the question really is, do they think that the return will be better or worse the longer they wait up to the deadline? I think they probably will deadline hunt if they're going to trade, and they'll probably wait as long as possible. But if you're wanting to do a tank job, essentially, because you determine you're going to need to trade both if you can't sign both, then the earlier you deal, then the better chance you have of being really bad.
We've heard a lot, Ezzy, and I'll let you start with you on this one. We've heard a lot that, the Jets aren't able to sign both of them. For whatever reason, they aren't able to sign both of them. Do you think that's still accurate, did you think that ever was accurate? And do you think that there is a possibility, that they do end up signing both of them between now and February 29th?
Yeah, it's pretty highly unlikely. I think everybody here would agree that the fact that you have Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien without a contract extension at this point, considering that also Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele are going to be either given bridge deals or long-term deals. And we talked about it during the first hour, Drew, with the amount of money that's tied up on the back end. The Jets are going to give Dustin Byfuglien $7.5 million a year. It's going to be tough to fit Andrew Ladd in there as well. But I don't think you should completely discount the notion that both Ladd and Byfuglien are signed. I mean, if you think about Corey Perry, guys, a couple of years ago, he didn't sign till I believe it was March. And that's it's even more rare because then the trade deadline had already passed at that point. And I didn't think there was any doubt in my mind that Corey Perry was going to re-sign along with Ryan Getzlaff on the Anaheim Ducks. So right now, Drew, I would put my money on Byfuglien being re-signed and Ladd being traded.
Corey Perry was signed to on March 19th of 2013, to your point, after
Give this guy a little credit
I'll
here.
Give you a little dap. You guys going to give dap to Ezzy there when he gets something right like that. But, yeah, Corey Perry was signed post-trade deadline, which, I mean, it's surprising. Of course,
that was my only good point for the roundtable. Now I have no points
you're
left.
For the rest of the, you're taking the rest of the day off. What about you guys? Do you think that there's a possibility both could be signed, or is this just a non-starter as far as, you know, it seems like it's a non-starter based on everything we've heard throughout the year. Do you believe that that's actually the case?
Absolutely. I mean, is it possible? For sure. I mean, they have the cap space, so technically they could sign both. They don't spend a ton of money. I mean, they obviously has, like as you mentioned, they have those contracts coming up. You know, in Mark Scheifele and Jacob Trouba, that they're going to have to do a lot of money, and this team will never spend to the ceiling. So it's not as if the possibility isn't there. Do I think it's likely? Probably not. I mean, this team is starting to see, especially through the Moose, you know, some of the prospects that they have and maybe need more time. So do you when you look into these deals, both of which will be long-term, do you want two guys who have been kind of that, you know, and I don't like using the Atlanta core term, but I mean, obviously it's truth in the sense that do you want to see, you know, the value of their contract really come in year four, year five of those contracts. So I think the possibility is there. Do I think it's likely? Probably not.
Scott?
Yeah, I agree with Jeff. I don't think it's likely. I think if anything, it's going to be Dustin Byfuglien, only because of what he brings to the team that Andrew Ladd doesn't. I mean, you know, big defenseman, solid guy, can score. He's got a big shot from the point, can play on the power play. I mean, the list is endless when it comes to Byfuglien and what he brings to the team. And I think what he can bring to this team when his contract, you know, it does get to the later years of it when and if they do sign him.
I got to interrupt for a second here. And Rich, I'll let you get your opinion. As he just stood up in the middle of the segment to take a picture of the entire round table. The question I'm asking is, Ez, why couldn't you have done that during the upcoming commercial break?
It's a good question. We'll wait till Ezzy walks back to the mic to answer it.
Trips over the three other mic cords that are sitting around here to try. You have to explain your logic. He's right, you know. He made that one good point about Corey Perry, and then straight downhill from his performance at that point in time.
Drew, you couldn't just let me take
a
picture.
No, I couldn't. I had to run the bus right over you there.
Was on the other side.
You know, we're having an all-star round table here. Scott and Jeff are in studio. We're having a good time. There's only four mics, so Richie was going to take the mic. We were sharing the mic. I just wanted to, you know, put it on Instagram, Dave Manuk of LegalCurve.com, and want a picture. So, and you had to throw me under the bus.
I have no problem with the picture itself. I have a problem with the timing of taking the picture.
I was still listening. Scott was making a good point.
He got us in our natural state.
Okay.
I didn't get a picture, by the way.
You didn't even take the picture?
I was about to take the picture, and then you called me out on taking the picture.
Okay. Wow.
That's a fail then.
That's a fail in any way you cut it.
Hey, Chris is going to take the picture
now. Chris, there you go. You know, we heard this past week the talk that there was a six-year, $36 million offer on the table to Andrew Ladd. That was reported by, well, I think, one of the TSN insiders. I'm not sure if it was Dreger or LeBron. You know, we heard that was the offer. If 636 is on the table, Richie, I'll start with you on this one. Are you surprised that that deal hasn't been consummated for if the Jets have got 6 years and $36 million on the table to Andrew Ladd?
I think market-wise, he probably thinks he's worth a little bit more, and probably market-wise, at least coming to the season, he may have been. And if he thinks he's giving this team a discount, he'd think he's probably giving them a second discount because he thinks he probably gave them a discount in the first contract. So I would think that plays a factor in it. I wonder if it's still on the table, and I guess, you know, your question, Drew, is can you sign both? If these offers are sitting there on the table and the Jets prefer Byfuglien to Ladd, again, that's all speculation, then I would assume that they are comfortable signing both because if that offer is open to acceptance, from Ladd's camp, and they're having active discussions with Dustin Byfuglien.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do one or the other, decision would have probably been made by now, you'd think, right? And then one would be on the market, and one, now maybe that's happening. We don't know about it. But you get the sense that money-wise, they wouldn't sign both. But the way this is playing out, I think it's a possibility still.
Jeff, what do you think? 636, should that be enough? Are you surprised that if that's on the table that the deal hasn't been consummated yet?
Personally, I would be surprised. I mean, I think it's one of those, that deal was probably there at the beginning of the season, and I don't want to do the dramatic paper pull away from the Jets side, and nor do I know if that was the case. But at the same time, it's, you'd think at you know, a player his age, player who I think likes to be in Winnipeg, would take a $6 million contract. I mean, if you think about it, really, that's like $8.4 million Canadian a season. So that's not like it's not like he's getting ripped off. And but it also comes down to, he did a lot of work for this team. When they first came over here, he was the ambassador. He made the phone calls. He came from an organization that knew how to be a professional organization, and he helped guide this management group along the way to be that team. I think it's more pride. It's more personal for him. I think it's something that, you know, he's the captain of the team. He's ridden the waves. This has been a emotionally fragile team. If he's going to commit for another 6 years, there's that extra bit that needs to go on to the price tag. If you live in Winnipeg, let's not kid ourselves here. Fan base is amazing, but it's one of the few things that attracts players, you know, from around the league. There's not a lot of guys staying. They want to come here. So, you know, he knows that Winnipeg needs to pay a premium, and maybe it's just a little back and forth. Can he get that contract somewhere else? I think the market is dipping, not in his favor. You know, if he was having the kind of year he had before, and I used to be on that side where, you know, he's getting paid $4.5 million. He's outperforming his contract. He led this team in points last season, has been up there in points in this team for the last few seasons. But the reality is it's a business, and it's a business as much as it is for the players as it is for the owners, and neither owes anyone anything after this. And there's an interesting piece by Paul Wiesek in the paper today that kind of outlines that, in that, you know, this is a business. So the Jets need to survive too, and there is a loyalty there. But I do think if they don't sign him, there will be a trickling effect with other veteran players in that locker room. I think that's the bargaining chip that he has.
As in that the Jets, you know, owed it to this player, and then they didn't step up when it mattered most?
Right, so when Blake Wheeler's contract comes to an end in a year and a bit, I mean, are they going to be treated? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, when it comes within a year. The idea of an extension comes on the table, you know, he's going to remember his good buddy Andrew Ladd didn't get the, you know, courtesy of or respect. Why would he stick his neck out when he's been here for this many years? So I think that's what I meant by more of a trickling effect.
Doesn't that start a bit of a dangerous precedent, though, in terms of, like, you know, now these guys are becoming bigger than the club. So, hey, we got to sign this guy because he did maybe more than the other next guy does. Like, I get these guys are from Atlanta and they've been here through the whole thing, but I just I don't know if that sets the precedent that, you know, for the next few years, all these Atlanta guys are now going to be asking for more money, and they're going to get signed because they've been here through thick and thin.
Well, you know, Jeff references the Paul Wiesek article, and I'll let you get there in a second, Jeff. I mean, in that article, you sort of talk, you know, Mark Chipman talks about the family dynamic that, you know, he's tried to instill here, you know, in Winnipeg, and, you know, he talks about the, you know, the right throughout the organization, and, you know, how close he is with some of these players, right. You know. If it's a family dynamic you're trying to instill, and then, you know, push comes to shove, your, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 difference, isn't your family worth that extra little bit? You know, if you're trying to really buy into that family dynamic argument,
absolutely. And then at the same point, from the management or the owner's perspective, isn't that family? There needs to be a give on both sides. So that's where the confusion or where the cloudiness comes. To Scott's point, I just think there is an element among all NHL teams of the way that ownership treats their players. And it's not so much the day, it's not so much the, you know, the daily grind of what they get and how they're treated, but when it comes to these pinnacle moments. And I just find that this is one of those pinnacle moments. And I think maybe when Blake Wheeler got that extension, they got some good praise. Now Andrew Ladd's up for it, and Dustin Byfuglien, they both trip over. It's like, oh, okay.
And Jeff, if it turns out that the Jets don't sign Andrew Ladd or Dustin Byfuglien or both, I think we'd all agree that there's a good chance that one player isn't signed to a contract extension. That's not an indictment on the Winnipeg Jets or the True North organization. As you mentioned, there is that element. It's tough, and I think it's important to consider that the Jets are a lower cap spending team. Mm-hmm. And these are really tough decisions. I think these two decisions are arguably the toughest decisions Chevy's had in 5 years. And he's had some tough decisions. I mean, he had to make the Evander Kane trade last year. Okay. He had to make other decisions on free agents, right? Michael Frolik, for example. But you look at Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien, their ages and how unique, especially Buff, is as a player. I mean, it comes down to when they have their salary cap projected 2016-17 and then 17-18, and you're paying Trouba and Scheifele first year of their second contracts. I think it's tough, and that doesn't mean that the Jets aren't completely happy with what Andrew Ladd has done over the last 5 years. As Jeff mentioned, Andrew Ladd has gone out there. He's played almost every single game. He's done what's been asked of him. Has he struggled sometimes? Sure, he has this year too. But it's going to be tough to sign these two guys. And that's why we've been talking about it all year, and it hasn't been done yet because of, I think, of how hard it's been to come to that number. And I agree too, Jeff, just let Richie get in here, but I don't necessarily think Andrew Ladd's play this year has affected whether he's going to sign that much. I think, if anything, it's hurting him a little bit as far as his trade value goes and his next contract. But I really, truly believe that they do have a number, and if that number's right, he'll sign.
Rich?
Really using another mic in the studio, eh?
Yeah.
It's business. Like, you know, to Jeff's point before, it's business. And so Kevin Shevardayoff has hard decisions to make. That's what they pay him for. And he has to make the decisions, and he's waited a long time here. And if they don't sign the players, it's not an indictment of the city, maybe the organization, but it might be of his tenure, depending on what happens. It might be. I mean, I don't know. You have to see what comes of this. He may make a great trade here and sign one, and everybody's happy. He may not sign either and make two great trades. We've talked about it, though. You just can't not sign either and not make a trade, because then you're setting your organization back.
Hold it there. When we come back, I wanted you guys to think about this question. Does Kevin Shevardayoff, is he in need of a win with over the next month with regard to his tenure as Winnipeg Jets general manager? It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're conducting our All-Star Break Roundtable with Jeff Hamilton and Scott Billick alongside Richard and Ezra. This is TSN 1290. 20 minutes past 11. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, our All-Star Break Roundtable with Jeff Billick and Scott, Jeff Hamilton and Scott Billick.
It's been great having Jeff Billick on the show.
I have an uncle named Jeff Billick.
Okay, well, there you go. I wasn't going to be wrong.
The show.
And then Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark. And today and tomorrow at the Raw Almond Dining Experience at the Forks. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home, eat in their full-service restaurant, or eat in a tent. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. You can find more information about Bernstein's and Raw Almond online as well.
Drew Pollock's doing a great job of hosting today.
Yes, Drew Pollock is doing a fantastic job. So before the break, I asked you guys to mull over the question, does Jets GM Kevin Shevardayoff need a win, quote-unquote, in the next 29 days as we get towards the trade deadline, for the...
Well, he needs a lot of wins because they're not in a playoff spot right now.
I don't necessarily mean as the team. I meant him in his tenure as Winnipeg Jets general manager. Is he in need of a personal victory as it comes to either the signing or the trade of either Ladd or Byfuglien? Jeff, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I mean, is he in need of a win? He needs to save face here. I don't know if he needs to necessarily be seen as a winner, but he can't really be seen as a loser in this. In that, as we were talking over the break, I mean, he needs to, and as Richie said, he needs to kind of, he can't let both slide through without a trade or a contract, because it really does little to put him in a position of power, and therefore, the rest of the fan base is, let's be realistic here. We have a passionate, educated fan base, and so everything's under the microscope. In other markets, this wouldn't necessarily be happening. I mean, but at the same time, just to simply answer the question, I do agree. I think he needs a win here, but he needs to do what's right for this team as well, and I think people will have a different opinion on what makes up a win.
Scott?
Yeah, to Jeff's point, they have to do something with these two contracts. Chevy has to do something with these, and he can't let them go and just walk. he needs to get something in return, and the return also has to be good. Like, it can't just be a mediocre return. And we saw last summer with Michael Furley, he got nothing for him. They need to get something for either Eflin, Ladd, or both, or he needs to make a big signing here and show that, again, like, he does have that power to do that, that he can make these, you know, big league GM moves. This isn't the AHL, it's the NHL. He's got to make sure that he's making those moves that, that the fan base, like Jeff said, will be, you know, content with.
And, Scott, everybody wants to talk about what the Jets are going to get in return for Andrew Ladd or Dustin Byfuglien, and everyone seems to kind of agree that it's probably going to be a first-round pick, it's probably going to be a younger prospect, or potentially someone who's been in the NHL for maybe 1 to 3 years, something like that. I've used Antoine Vermette as kind of a good comparable, Klaus Dahlbeck at a first-rounder, and then he went back to Arizona. But based on what Jeff said, you know, when we were off-air there, how Chevy did in the Evander Kane, Zach Bogosian trade should, I think, give Jets fans a lot of optimism that if he does decide to trade Andrew Ladd or Dustin Byfuglien, he's going to get a good return, right? His history of big trades, and he's only made one of them, mm-hmm. really one trade period, was a pretty good one. I think we'd all agree that Drew Stafford and Tyler Myers have added a lot to this team, even Joel Armia this year. So if he's able to get the first rounder for one of these players, they nail that first rounder. Look at Arizona getting Nick Merkley as part of the Keith Yandle trade. I mean, Anthony Duclair, Nick Merkley, you know, pretty good player in the WHL last year. If the Jets are able to get a prospect and a player that they can put into the roster lineup, pardon me, next year, you know, I don't think you'd have as much to be worried about. But then you have to ask yourself, well, you take Andrew Ladd or Dustin Byfuglien out of the lineup, how do you replace those guys? Are they going to be good enough to make the playoffs next year?
Richie?
Well, you know, those are all good points. With Yandle, you had term left, right? And you ate salary. Arizona ate salary, so it made it more appealing for a team. And I agree, the return was great. I guess my question is, what teams have the cap space for both of these guys? And that Byfuglien's a little bit harder to move because he makes about $100,000 more on the cap. You can probably make it happen. But I guess the question is the team that's seeking one of these guys, do they have the prospects, the young players available? And you know, that the value there for drafted players, you know, are going to be fairly useful. And you look at the way teams fill out their rosters now with cheap talent, young talent. If they're pretty close, teams are very unlikely to move those players. So then what are you getting in return? It might be draft picks, and the Jets have drafted very well, so you can feel confident about that. But if it's going to be draft picks, if the best return is draft picks, you have to make the deal. But boy, it's going to be a long year, two, three, you know, seasons coming up here for the Jets if that's the case. So that, to me, is the issue. Is your best offer one that maybe puts your job in jeopardy down the line, or do you have the full support and it doesn't actually matter? I'd probably lean towards the second one, and that ownership really seems to be behind Cheveldayoff, and he has that security. I mean, basically started with a 7-year deal after they gave him the extension. But it might be that issue in terms of the best offer. It may be something that doesn't help this team short term.
Can you sell that to the fan base? I mean, we know that the fan base isn't going anywhere. They're all under long-term ticket contracts and everything else. But we've heard the five-year plan, and this is the fifth year. And then all of a sudden, if you trade Ladd and Byfuglien and you have to almost press the reset button, especially if you're not getting ready-to-go NHL talent in return, can you sell, it's going to take another 3-4 years to see all those players and prospects come into fruition and join the team? Can you sell that to the fan base right now, Jeff?
I mean, it's a tough sell, but I mean, can you sell? Here's a question. Do you have to sell it to the fan base? I mean, do you have to have their agreements? I think that's one of the biggest traits of a strong business person is to know that it might go against the grain, but still know that it's in the best interest for your team. So I don't think you need to be, and I don't think that, a guy like Kevin Shelvey, he obviously appreciates the fans, but I don't think he ever weighs his opinion on, what's the fans going to think if I sign him? I mean, I'm sure he has a pulse on where they're leaning. But really, I think it's one of those things where, let's be realistic here. I mean, the if you look at the Moose model too, I mean, they knew they were going to struggle heading into this season, and these guys need to mature into, teammates, into the potential that where the Jets management sees them, eventually being, and that probably isn't for a couple of years. So is it a tough sell? sure, but do they need to make those decisions and determine if that's the right path? I think they will essentially follow that mind before they have to sell it to the fan base.
I think it does set them back, though. I mean, Jeff mentioned it during the break. You know, maybe it's 3 to 4 years that this might set the team back in terms of their progress towards, you know, the playoffs and the Stanley Cup, being a Stanley Cup contender. So in that sense, I think that is a tough sell. But like Jeff said, like, I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff can sit there and be like, oh, I wonder what the fans think. Well, that's not his job. His job is to make this team better, whether it's in the short term or in the long run. He's got to believe in what he's doing and in the process that, and fans hate that word process, but he's got to believe in his own process and what he thinks is best.
And Scott, if you look at the Calgary Flames, for example, the Calgary Flames were in a complete rebuild, and we just had George Johnson on. I mean, nobody expected, I think there was maybe one or two people that I can think of that picked the Calgary Flames to make the playoffs last year. And when you consider that the Jets have one of the best young goalies in the NHL, and it's quite possible that Kyle Connor is in the NHL next year. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself here. I mean, it's possible that he plays another year, maybe even two. But the way he's tearing it up right now, he's the Hobie Baker favorite, I would say. You throw him into the lineup, maybe he has a similar type of impact as a Johnny Gaudreau. I'm just saying, guys, there's a possibility that this isn't a 3 or 4 year rebuild. There is a possibility that it is a 3 or 4 year rebuild. But with the players that the Jets have coming up through the pipeline, I think that it's realistic to think that the Jets can rebuild here on the fly. Sign one of these players, trade one of them. You know, you get some contributions from some younger players. You know, Nikolaj Ehlers is a year older. You know, other players are coming into the lineup. Then, you know, you're looking at a situation where the Jets could be back in the playoffs as early as next year, 2 years. I mean, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here, that just because one of Ladd or Bufflin is traded doesn't necessarily mean the Jets aren't going to make the playoffs till 2019.
True. I mean,
they were supposed to win the Stanley Cup, according to the Hockey News, wasn't it?
But what's fair enough. But like, well, then what's the last 5 years been? I mean, what have you been building towards? Are you back to starting again? And like, you have these young players coming through the system. Well, because you haven't made the playoffs, so you have high draft picks. You haven't traded your draft picks, and you've kept them and tried to build within your organization, which is completely defensible and has proven to be pretty successful, I think, so far in terms of that plan. However, if that was the plan all along and you weren't intending on contending this past few years, why did you keep all these veterans here to finish in the middle or bottom of the standings? Like, what is the plan? Like, that's the question. Are you waiting? And again, like, you have single tickets available now. You see the ads. And I mean, this fan base is loyal and going to stick by this team. I don't really question that. But if you go into next season, if you don't have either of these players and you go into next season, what are you selling at game 20? And again, most teams will stay in it because of the point structure. But after a while, what are you selling? If they're not in it at an earlier point than this year, what is the fan base thinking?
I think this idea of this five-year term thing, I mean, it was vocalized in that it was going to take some time to get to where they want. So I agree with Richie in that, you know, what do you really have to show for? I think you have to show for that first playoff thing, which I think was a huge thing for this organization. But at the same time, you make a valid point in where, you know, if you didn't feel that was the point you were getting at. But I think you also needed, you had people that were relatively new at this, you know, new at bringing an NHL team in, you know, needed to stay competitive. I don't know if they necessarily thought that they would be, you know, perennial playoff contenders by any stretch, but you needed to still have a balance. You needed to have a culture exist here. The last thing you wanted to do is ship all your veterans away, bring in and kind of learn along the process with young players that are also learning to become professionals, you know? So I think that whole harvesting these veterans was not, you know, maybe at this point in where we're at is questionable, but at the same time at that point was the right thing to do. And it's an interesting case with Connor and the people they have up. But these guys, they're drafting high, but they're not drafting 1, 2, 3, 4. They're not getting guys that are going to, you know, they can eventually build around. They're getting guys who are going to take a few years to get in and to mold and be part of this team. And I think that's where the dilemma is now, whereas where do these guys fit in? How long? Where do we project them? Because even when we do look at those hockey magazines, we look at people's ratings of these prospects, NHL ready is still not till around 2017, 2018, 2018, 2019. So it's, you know, a lot of these guys you hope mature to where they are, but there's still going to be a few years where you get stuck in what we've been talking about all day.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus and look more at the NHL in the macro sense as opposed to the Winnipeg Jets in the micro sense. We continue our All-Star Break Roundtable. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 25 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg make up Illegal Curve. We're joined in studio by Jeff Hamilton and Scott Billick as part of our All-Star Break Roundtable. We shift our focus from the Winnipeg Jets to the NHL in general. Gentlemen, right now we sort of have three teams that I would suggest are the runaway favorites as the best teams in the league this year in the Western Conference. To no one's surprise, the Chicago Blackhawks and the Los Angeles Kings after one down year for the Kings. And then in the Eastern Conference, the Washington Capitals are blowing away most teams there. Would you be surprised if it's anybody other than those three teams or two of those three teams representing the respective conferences in the Stanley Cup Finals? Scott, why don't we start? We'll start with you on that one.
No, I think the Caps are just far and away the best team. Maybe even in the NHL right now. I mean, it's tough to always say, you know, who's better in the West and who's better in the East. And if you look at the Stanley Cup winners, it's obviously been the West for the last, you know, 5 out of 6 years or so. But, I mean, one of the beauties of having NHL Game Center and being able to watch the game, I watched a lot of Caps games this year. They're the best team. I want to see what they're like, what they bring to the table. And, like, you know, it starts in goal. They got Braden Holtby, who's a Vezina, you know, running away with the Vezina, I'd think.
Oh, yeah.
Ovechkin, I mean, I don't even know if you have to say anything about it. And then they're young guys like Evgeny Kuznetsov. Hopefully I didn't butcher his name there. But he's been unreal as well. Like, I just think they have all the tools right now. They can check. They play a good defensive game, great goal team. And then they obviously have the scoring. They have everything that will take them deep into playoffs. And I think it's just going to matter. Like, I think Holtby's played like 39 of 49 games. So, like, I don't know if that's going to come into play here, if he's going to be, you know, rested enough for the playoffs. But again, he's been their workhorse for the last few years now, so I don't see them dipping at all.
No, and Holtby played more last year. He played 73 games last year. I agree with you, Scott. Rich picked the Washington Capitals before the season to win the Stanley Cup. So, I mean, Rich can get in here on the Capitals. You got to give him credit for this. But, I mean, the fact that we're here at the All-Star break and the closest team in the Eastern Conference standings to the Washington Capitals is the Florida Panthers is remarkable. It's been a pretty rough year when you consider the nosedive the Montreal Canadiens took, how the New York Rangers have struggled, the Islanders are struggling. I thought the Islanders would be a lot higher up in the standings this year. It's just not a very good conference this year. So I would bet a lot of money, and I don't have a lot of money, but I would, on the Capitals winning the East.
Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, the Capitals are the most exciting team to watch too. I mean, they're gonna compete with, you know, they're a little bit further down, but they're gonna compete with the New York Rangers, who also I'm a big believer in experience. In when it gets down to the end of an 82 game season, there's a reason why there's the same teams in that clump, and same goes for the playoffs. I mean, Washington's an exciting team to play. They got an absolutely deadly power play. It's fun to watch no matter what team you cheer for. But I still have to go back to Chicago. I just don't understand why or how or what's going on in that room. It's just a culture you built where you can pretty much I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the negotiation room of a Chicago Blackhawks team. It's like, do you want to come play for a team that's arguably going to win the Stanley Cup every season, like, or at least going to compete? I mean, the negotiation is a little bit less than, you know, compared to contrast it with a team like the Jets. I won't go back towards Winnipeg, but it would just be incredible to see that divide. But Chicago, I personally think they're on route for another championship.
Rich?
Yeah, I think if you're looking at it, those would be the two teams that are going to be the toughest to knock off. And the matchups in the East, again, the playoffs aren't starting today, but the matchups in the East would be pretty interesting. Rangers, Islanders, Capitals, Penguins. Like, that's what it would be today. So, you know, it's interesting that Chicago and Washington, sitting at the top of both of their conferences, I think would have pretty tough first-round matchups. It's one of those things, the system, the way it is, kind of rewards teams in the second and third spot in bad divisions. So there's a few traps there, but those teams are certainly looking like they're running on all cylinders.
Los Angeles or Chicago? Which, I mean, you just said Chicago.
I was going to just peak on Los Angeles, because it feels like they're back. Their style is back. Their mm-hmm. confidence is back. The structure of their team is back to being one of those teams that play a consistent game, play a tough game. I mean, for a couple of years there, they weren't that team that they are seem to be revived to in this season. So I do pick Chicago over LA, but LA will be an interesting storyline in the playoffs.
Scott?
Yeah, any way that you look at it, having that series is just great for hockey. Like, as a fan of the game, I want to watch that series, and I want them to go out there and beat the hell out of each other and just play. You know, it's going to be a great series. And, you know, if you look at those two teams, they've won 5 of the last 6 Cups, right? I mean, those two teams are the closest that you'll get to, like, you know, a modern-day dynasty teams. Like, Chicago, you know, perennial continues every year. It's incredible. And maybe the Kings got a little burnt out in the last couple of years. I mean, they played a lot of hockey when they won those two Cups. And so, yeah, no, I think there's no way people would be upset about a Los Angeles-Chicago series just because of how good both teams are and where they are at in their, I guess, lineage of the team or whatever.
It's totally true. And the thing, if you look at a bigger picture about that matchup, is still the fast run-and-gun Hawks against kind of the slow, methodical, bigger than you, stronger than you, LA Kings. And it's that contrast in styles that I love to watch if it comes to that again. And the NHL, of course, loves it, guys, we know, because it's massive markets with star power. Like Doughty, Keith, and you're looking at Quick,
Kane.
It's crazy. Yeah. So, I mean, and the huge markets, big ratings. I mean, even Canadian fans, I mean, that's the best hockey you're likely going to see. So who wouldn't be happy with that?
Winnipeg loves it. Taves is there, right? So.
That Western Conference Final from 2014,
yeah,
I think, was the best Western Conference Final we've seen in, I don't know, 5, 6, maybe even 10 years. And I agree with what Scotty and Richie had to say. I think that if it's Chicago and L.A. in the Western Conference Finals, that's just going to be great for hockey fans.
Best worst from the first pre-All-Star portion of the NHL schedule. We'll start with you, Jeff. You know, what jumped out at you? You know, best player, worst player, best team, most disappointing team. Maybe not worst player, but, you know, most disappointing player.
On the top end things, I mean, Patrick Kane, especially what he had to come into this season with, the baggage, the pressure, he's nothing short of the best player in the National Hockey League, in my opinion. I'm also continue to be super impressed with Alexander Ovechkin, and it's amazing, because if you would ask this question a couple seasons ago, it would have been so easy to say Sid versus Ovi, and you know, Jets fans would let him know every time he showed up here. But that argument is that debate's no longer a debate at this point. I mean, it's obviously Ovechkin. As far as the lower end part of, we were kind of talking about this in break, but I Jakub Voracek for me. I think if I'm putting myself in a position to answer this question, I put myself kind of that armchair GM in that, you know, what am I most worried about? You commit a lot to guys in dollars. He has an $8.25 million cap hit starting next season for, I believe, 7 years. And he's got 8 goals. He's got 36 points in 47 games around there. And I just, you're in the last... When you sign a guy to a commitment like that, it's not that you need him to skyrocket through, but if you're in the third or fourth year of a 7-year deal and you slump a little bit, but you've had 3 years of good on your side, and Voracek has had a couple seasons good on his side, but when you start that new contract, I think he's up against big expectations, and right now I think he's one of the guys that stands out as not reaching them.
Scott?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Pat Kane. You know, by far the best player in the NHL right now in terms of production, goal scoring. He's top of the league. He's scoring. He's assisting on goals. Like, there's no issue with Pat Kane there. I think for, you know, my disappointing players this year, I mean, Ryan Getzlaf has 3 goals. But Sidney Crosby has 41 points in 47 games. Those are great numbers. People in this town would die for, you know, more players like that. But Crosby's never been below that point per game threshold, and usually he's much, much higher above it. Crosby might be my, you know, in terms of the way that Crosby's been.
In terms of expectations,
right? Exactly. And, you know, you see Alex Ovechkin just, like, year after year after year, just, you know, he's had a couple down years, sure, but I mean, he's just been that better player. And like Jeff said, that debate might not be really a debate anymore. In terms of teams, the way that Montreal has collapsed without Carey Price, I find that to be disappointing. You know, like, goaltending is a large, you know, it's 9/10 of the law, I guess. But when it comes to their team and just where they've gone, I read something before maybe it was, you know, just in the middle of January, they had like, you know, 6 points or something like that, or 6 wins since December 1st. Or
I think I read or heard that if they continue to play at this pace, the points pace they've been on since really since Carey Price went down, or, you know, a couple games thereafter, they will be worse than the Columbus Blue Jackets at season's end. They would be in the driver's seat to draft Austin Matthews. They would be the worst team in the NHL based on their recent points percentage.
Which is crazy, I think, yeah. Given where they were a month or 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. You know, the collapse would be, you know, pretty epic.
That's the Ovechkin of the Montreal Canadiens, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if, say, Washington didn't, with all the firepower they have, imagine they didn't have Alexander Ovechkin. I don't think they'd be even close to where they are. Like,
sure,
Carey
Price
needs to be on that, needs to be on there. See, one, I mean, last season alone, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Has he?
Yeah, you know what? I like Jeff's pick of Jakub Voracek. He's been disappointing, but, I mean, you guys know, I know Richie's a big fan, too. For me, it has to be Ryan Getzlaf. I mean, Ryan Getzlaf, when he's on, and he was on during the first round of the playoffs against the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, he's a dominant center. He was dominant during the regular season as well. But the fact that he's got 3 goals, and I realize he's had some injury problems at the beginning of the season, but you're talking about a 2-time gold medalist at the Olympics who was a huge force up the middle for Team Canada. Like, Ryan Getzlaf is, I would still put him as a top 5 center in the NHL, so it's really surprising. I mean, he's got the assists. He always has the assists, but the goal totals, he's never going to be a 40-goal guy in the NHL, but 3 goals. So, I mean, I'm sure he'll turn it up. You know, Drew, as far as individual performances go, I can't argue with Patrick Kane. I mean, Patrick Kane is having a career season this year. For me, I'm going to go a little bit off the board, you know, someone who's actually very similar to Patrick Kane, individual performance, Johnny Gaudreau. You watch this guy, 5'7", 5'8", you know, came into the NHL late. Calgary's not having a very good year this year, but you look at Johnny Gaudreau, he's at a point per game. He just seems to always get on the score sheet. He's a really good player for Calgary, and the future is very bright there with Monahan and Sam Bennett. So for me, he's got to be up there for best individual performances, and you can throw in others. Sagan has been very good, and you could throw out other disappointing guys in there. But for me, too, I think for a guy like that who's small and in today's NHL, you know, I think it's really impressive what he does on a nightly basis.
Richie, last word to you on this one.
Well, I'm just going to, yeah, I mean, you guys have, I think, covered it very well in terms of the performances. The one thing I'll leave it at is if I were to say to you on January 30th, 2016, that the Florida Panthers would be leading the Atlantic Division with 63 points, and their first-line right winger would be 43-year-old Jaromir Jagr, who has 15 goals and 33 points through 46 games, you would tell me I'm completely insane.
Well, he's just a freak. I mean, he's a force of nature.
So that storyline, to me, is an incredible storyline.
I got to say, I'm a little surprised that nobody mentioned John Tavares. He's having a pretty down year. I mean, the Islanders are in the playoff spot and everything else, but if you look at John Tavares' numbers this year, you know, you got to go to the second page on NHL.com to find him. Only 34 points in 44 games. I expected more from Tavares this season.
Yeah, but I think Tavares, Drew, that's a fair point, but I think Tavares, the playoffs will determine how successful Tavares' season is.
Fair enough. As long as they're still in a playoff spot, and that doesn't change, you know, he can redeem himself when the playoffs begin. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment, we'll talk about the All-Star game and the All-Star festivities. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our All-Star Break Roundtable on TSN 1290. Final segment this Saturday morning. Big thank you to both Jeff Hamilton and Scott Billick for joining us as part of our All-Star Break Roundtable. Of course, Richie Ezzi, they're here with me, Drew Mandel as well. Might as well spend the last couple minutes talking about the All-Star game, the All-Star weekend itself. Of course, the formal festivities kick off today with the skills competition, with the game coming tomorrow afternoon. Will you watch any of the All-Star game at all? Jeff, I'll start with you. Any of this weekend, are you going to sit down and watch any of it?
I've been saying it for weeks. I always say, yeah, I'm going to watch the All-Star game, and then Sunday comes along and I never watch it, but I'm certainly watching it this season. Two words, John Scott. I want to see the rollout from it. I want to see what it's like for him to play 3-on-3, and that's the main reason why I'm going to make sure this time.
So you're going to watch the car crash aspect of it a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say out loud, but I'm kind of team John Scott. Like, I don't want him to, you know, I don't think he's going to be unbelievable, but I want to see him have fun, and I want to see the whole weekend be surrounded around him and ruined.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean, that's exactly what I want to see John Scott go in there. I want to get a hat trick. I want to win the 90 grand or whatever it is that they win. Like,
the winning
team. I just
team,
want him to just kind of stick it a little bit, to how the NHL kind of treated the guy. And, I mean, I don't know if you guys read that Players Tribune piece this week. I mean, you almost – I don't want to say you feel sorry for the guy, but the guy, he's a human just like every other NHL player, and he kind of got the runaround there. And it's been nice, and you see some of the tweets that some of the other guys are some of the reports that are coming out of the All-Star, and they're kind of rallying around this guy, hoping that he can, you know, go out there and have some fun.
Has he?
Yeah, well, it's like Jeff said, and it's like Scott just said, this game has become really about John Scott, and the NHL kind of created this problem in the first place. And the Players Tribune article, Scott, I definitely read that, and if you haven't read that article, you know, maybe we'll tweet it out, and I'm sure most hockey fans have seen that article by now, but it's incredible to hear it from his perspective, right? So, yeah, there is that element, and I guess this is the blessing in disguise for the NHL that potentially they're going to have more viewers who are now turning in for John Scott. But, you know, it's going to be pretty special. He's going to have his family there, I imagine. And, you know, it's kind of added a different dynamic to the game because, you know, I agree with you, Jeff. Every year I seem to say I'm going to watch it, and then I end up falling asleep.
Totally.
4 o'clock in the afternoon.
2 o'clock in the afternoon, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it starts
at 4:30
Sunday's
a day of rest
something.
Unless there's a game.
I could sleep whenever, Rich. You know that. I can fall asleep 2, 7, doesn't matter.
Richie?
I mean, I won't watch the game. I usually watch the skills competition. I like that. You get a little more chatter and just about the league and stuff and to find it a little more entertaining. But I just don't know why. I mean, the John Scott thing is crazy blown out of proportion. But if it's talked about, that means the All-Star game is talked about. And if there was no John Scott thing, who the heck would be talking about the All-Star game?
Well, nobody. And I think, what about the fact that, you know, you see Ovechkin bailing out and Taves bailing out? Isn't that the, and you see it every year, there's always players, I mean, that just, you know, fake injuries or whatever.
Crosby's went twice?
Once in his career, I believe he's gone. And, you know, they say that, you know, so you get suspended for that first game after the break, or you can't play that first game after the break because of, you know, the injury. You know, the fact that a lot of the top flight players don't care. I mean, I get why John Scott cares. He's never going to be around those guys again. You know, isn't that the biggest reason not to have the All-Star game?
Well, I'll let these boys get in here in a second. But first of all, Jonathan Taves is injured. So I think it's ridiculous that he's being suspended when he was injured in the last game he played. And that's just my own personal opinion.
I forgot to add the quotations around injured.
Injured. Just like Ovi.
Okay,
yeah.
Exactly. Okay,
you know,
maybe
he
that's...
didn't play, so you know, let's look at that in context. They were losing 5-0 to Carolina, so he didn't play the third period because of a quote-unquote injury. And you know,
I'm just saying, I mean, for all that we've been told, he was injured. Maybe it wasn't anything that serious, but the point is, no Sidney Crosby, no Alex Ovechkin, no Jonathan Taves. That's not an All-Star game.
Yeah, but Crosby's never really been there, though, right? Like, I mean, the whole thing about this is like, okay, and I kind of look at the Pro Bowl. You won't see any Denver players and you won't see any Carolina players in the Pro Bowl. You're not going to see Ovechkin because they are the top team in the NHL. And this guy's got to be rested. He wants to win a cup. He doesn't care about the All-Star game. Jonathan Taves wants to be rested. He's got like 3 or 4 days. 5 days in the schedule is huge for some of these guys. You know, some of these guys are dealing with lingering bumps and bruises. Like, this whole thing, this whole suspension thing is ridiculous to me. Like, I just let these guys rest. Yeah. It's better for the playoffs. Nobody watches this game anyways. Lots of people watch the playoffs. So let these best players be in the playoffs.
And I agree with you 100%, Scott. And I think we almost, and I realize, you know, we've got the hockey show, so we talk about it a lot, and it's talked a lot about on H&L and the roundtable and et cetera, et cetera. I guess we're the new roundtable, but the point is that it's for the fans, it's for the kids. Yes, it is for corporate sponsors. Yeah, fine. Let's not overanalyze it. I feel like this is the most overanalyzed All-Star game I have ever experienced. Maybe it's because of the John Scott thing. But I feel like last year, and especially in an Olympic year, when you kind of forget that the All-Star game exists, right? And there's people calling for the All-Star game to kind of be abolished. I don't think that'll ever happen, or it's certainly not going to happen in the short term. But I think that, you know, all these players, to Scott's point, I mean, if you're picked, it's an honor. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's just kind of like a couple of days of just seeing all the guys together and just kind of celebrating hockey. Doesn't matter who wins. Let's not take it too seriously.
That's it for this Saturday morning and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to Jeff Hamilton and Scott Billick for joining us as part of our roundtable discussion about the NHL at the All-Star
I didn't realize
break.
I was ending it there. I was waiting for Jeff to end it
well,
off.
The time is the time, Mezzy. Also, big thanks to Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey and George Johnson for joining us earlier in the program. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation's Cycle on Life, Keener Jerseys, and the Rady Fitness Center. Big thanks to producer Chris, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Scott Billick, for Jeff Hamilton. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.